He's helping us lay a foundation. I think you realize that. And that foundation is he wants to make us a great church. So he took us through Thessalonians. And let's just recap a bit, huh? In that passage, we looked at a church that was great in ancient times. Those were not easy times for them. But that community became great by living out the gospel message. This brought them through suffering for the name of Christ at the hands of those that thought they knew better than them. In that epistle, the apostle calls them to remain faithful and to be holy, and Dale has been speaking to us about holiness. And in that church, they longed for Christ appearing, the parousia. They ached and desired to see the Lord return to earth and establish his kingdom, a kingdom that would be preceded by a musical note on the sound of a trumpet. A great church longs for those things, longs to join that heavenly anthem. And now we're in the Gospel of John. And the Gospel of John holds a special place in my heart because, it speaks to me as a Jewish person. Its structure is based on the feast, and it's transformed the way I see my own identity and Jewish heritage. But of course, you know that the Gospel of John not only speaks to Jews, it's got a very universal message, which brings us today to some of the greatest passages in the Gospel. In the Gospel, Jesus says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him would not perish, but have everlasting life." In the Gospel, he says, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live." And now we've come down to a final moment, his final prayer, the last words that Jesus is going to say before he's arrested, the very last words in freedom that he says to his Father in the most intimate way, through prayer. And it is a prayer that Dale said last week we have the privilege of eavesdropping in on. It is a very important moment. It is the evening of the Passover Seder, which is the highlight of any Jewish year in any Jewish family. And at the beginning of the Seder meal, he says, "I have greatly desired to share this moment with you. I've greatly desired to share this moment with you." And then that word desire comes back up in the prayer. So as we look at this prayer, as we've been meditating it from last week to this week, I think that it should really prick our ears to attend to what the Lord is saying. I mean, what last words would you like to give when you knew it was your final hour? And of course, one of the main themes of this passage is the word mission. Jesus is sent. Jesus sends us out. In Hebrew, it's shaliach. In Latin, it is missio, from which we get the word missive, or mission, or missionary, a communication, a communicator. The word exists in French as well, almost exclusively in politics. You have the mission, you have the, which is like a project, or you have the démissionnaire, which is the person who quits. That's the origin of the word apostle and missionary. Now, I'm a missionary, and it's not a popular thing to be a missionary. In fact, when most people think about missions, they may think about Robert De Niro and Jeremy Irons in that beautiful film that won a Palme d'Or and an Academy Award, The Mission. And it's about a former or a reformed slave trader who becomes a Jesuit missionary in South America. And he and Jeremy Irons ultimately fail in what they're trying to do. And the subtext of this beautiful film is that missions may be well-meaning, but they are ultimately misguided, doomed to failure, and in the end, cause more damage than any good they might accomplish. Why, Joshua, why? Why can't you just leave these poor people alone? They didn't ask for your influence. Why do you bother to missionize? Why do you bother? What's the point? Let a sleeping dog lie. Well, maybe the answer is in French culture, French history. I know of no greater missionary culture than the French. Gilets jaunes, manifestation, révolution. We're a culture in France that if you can do something about it, do it. If you can speak out, speak out. You must stand up. That is very interesting, but that's not the kind of mission that the Bible or that Jesus is referring to in this prayer. See, the thing is, the film Mission misrepresents Mission, which is why we have this bad connotation. But that the idea of Mission is why John is writing the gospel in the first place. He has been thinking about this for a while. He's at the twilight of his years. He's older. He's seen his friends die, and he's seen the other gospels written. And so he's writing this because he wants to get across to us that there is the promise of a divine rescue mission embodied in Jesus and explained in this prayer. How does John explain this heavenly mission? The answer is in Jesus' ultimate goal of this prayer, that they may all be one. How can we be one? Reminds me of a friend of mine, Dan Sered, who's a Jewish believer in Jesus in Israel, and he's the only Jewish believer in his family, and it caused some strife in his relationships. And so religion is a taboo subject. When they get together, they decide to kindly, silently disagree and don't talk about it. But recently, his family asked him, "What is the difference, Dan, between your religion and other religions?" So Dan was inspired to draw a little drawing that he showed me on the napkin that they were eating, and I'm going to draw it for you, if you don't mind my remedial art. So this is what Dan drew. It's small, but proportionately the napkin is probably like this. Do you see that? So God is on the mountaintop, and all religions are basically people trying to get up to God. And he said, that's the difference with what I believe, or what I think, is the following. So he drew paper. He drew the mountain again. God at the top, man at the bottom. And the difference with what we believe is that man doesn't go up to God, God comes down to man. And that's the difference. It reminds me of something that Woody Allen once said. Woody Allen said there's a planet called Helm. And Helm is 600 million light years from the Earth. But they're building a new highway, and that new highway will save us 2 hours from that trip. The point is, we're still 600 million light years away. The truth of it is that you can't make it on your own. And Jesus has come as the ultimate missionary to bridge that gap. Why am I a missionary? You're asking the wrong person. It's not my mission, you see. It's God's mission. It's God's mission that he is inviting us all to participate in so that we may all be one. What is the object of his mission? And that's what the beautiful thing of this prayer is. You are the object of his mission. I am the object of his mission. Assuming that Jesus prayed in Hebrew, which is a safe assumption, given that that's the holy language of prayer for all Jewish people, especially at sacred times, I can safely assume that when Jesus used the word one, when he talked about unity, when he talked about God's unique oneness, he used the word echad. And echad is a special word for me. It has a lot of emotional connotation because echad is the word used in the divine declaration of God's unity that Jews all over the world pray. They say, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, echad. This word doesn't describe a strict or rigid oneness. It is a composite oneness. For example, echad is the word that's used in the Garden of Eden when God says it is, he says in that passage, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. In other passages, it talks about Echad as all of the clans and the tribes and the families of Israel getting together in Jerusalem, and they were all Am Echad, one people, one nation, one community. So this word describes what God's oneness is. It is a community of holy intimacy and love. This is what Jesus is asking of the Father. This is what Yeshua, or Jesus, is exemplifying in this prayer. His mission is to make us one with him, and in that process, one with the other. Why does he need this? I'm sorry, that's the wrong question. He doesn't need this. Here we have to do a wee bit of theology to understand the why of God's mission. See, God is love. He was love before the creation of the world. before you and I. However, if we mean God is love throughout eternity, that means that he loved someone. The answer is found in the Holy Trinity. This is the eternal relationship of love and intimacy that we are witnessing in Jesus' prayer. Jesus spent a life of prayer, and we are not privy to most of his prayers, but in this passage, we catch a glimpse of that love and intimacy that Jesus shared with God the Father. The glory which you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one, just as we are one, I in them, and you in me, and that they may be perfected in unity, so that the world may know that you sent me and loved them, even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that they also, whom you have given me, be with me where I am, so that they may see my glory which you have given me, for you have loved me before the foundation of the world. So God is love. God is love, and he shares his love and his glory with the Son and the Holy Spirit throughout all time, in perfect and complete unity, glorifying and cherishing each other with joy and intimacy throughout all time. So why does God desire this mission? Why does he want this? We've already established he doesn't need us. So if it's not for him, that means it's for us. It's for you. It's for me. To be God is to not need anything. It is not to find someone to love, because he already enjoys that in an eternally nourishing and gratifying relationship in that tri-unity. If he went to all this trouble, and it's not for him, it is for us. It is true love. It is selfless. This is what love incarnate is. The Trinity, in that holy circle of love and intimacy, said to each other, let's widen the circle. Let's bring in the people that Jesus is praying about. This is what he's praying about. He is praying for you. The thought of it brings him joy. It is his desire. He wants to bring us. He wants to bring you into this circle. He says in this prayer, but now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world so that they may have what we have, my joy made full in themselves. How is it that, if you think about it, Jesus knows that he's about to endure the hardest, most painful, most hateful hours of his life in torture, in isolation, on the cross, and yet he speaks of joy? Well, the answer is found a little bit later in a passage in Hebrews where it says this, Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you know you will not grow weary and lose heart. What joy was set before him? What joy was on the other side of that cross? You were the object of his mission. You were joy, and the thought of you filled him with joy at the darkest and most difficult moments of his existence. Jesus had that raison d'être, that mission that he incarnated it and filled him with joy. If you embrace mission, you will also have a life filled with joy. See, this is why we were created. We were created with a sense of mission. As Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you got to serve somebody. That is why we were created. Jesus, in this prayer, is peering down the annals of time and space and seeing you here this morning. And that thought filled him with joy. In that same passage in Hebrews, it says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That means that right now, he still has that joy. Right now, he's still praying for you, still believing in you, still desiring you, still wanting you in that circle of love and intimacy. Amen.